Welcome to an episode of the Phoenix Rising podcast. I am your host, Lisa Hillier, and today I have Ross Blake on the show. And Ross is a men's leadership and relationship coach, movement teacher, father, and husband. He has over two decades of experience in coaching, spanning strength and conditioning, nutrition and physiology, relational physics, sexuality and sexual mastery, life coaching, and archetypal psychology. And I love this episode so much. We dive into all the realms of relationship, how to support a man, how to deepen your own surrender so that you can allow him to fully take the lead. And if this episode resonates with you, please share it. Please give it a 5-star review. Please write a review. It helps so much to get these episodes out to a wider audience. And there is a slight delay in this episode. Both Ross and I are on the Sunshine Coast, but his is in Australia. Mine's in Canada. So there's a slight delay. So just letting you know before we dive in. And as well, I just wanted to let you know of a couple new offerings that I have coming up. I have the Crone's Council starting again in February, as well as Cosmic Love Council. And these are really circles of women coming together. It's non-hierarchical. There's not a whole lot of processing or coaching. It's more sharing and learning from each other. Definitely check out these councils. The link is in the show notes, and as well, I have been crafting up a ton of tallow products. I've got soap and beauty cream, face cream, that both of them are so, so amazing. I love them, and I love crafting them. And so there is a link in the show notes as well if you would like to purchase some Bison Beauty or Beef Babe or tallow soap. And so, yeah, now let's dive into the episode. Okay, welcome to the podcast, Ross. I'm super happy to have you here. I've been following you on Instagram and love the content that you're putting out there. It seems like there's this return of manly men is what I'll call it, but also there's a term that you use that's strong and empathetic men. Mm. And I think that's very powerful. And we'll go more into that in the conversation. To start, what has been the journey that has brought you to the work that you're offering the world today?
Well, it was getting to a point and seeing how that wasn't, or what I was using in my life as an orientation or a reference point wasn't working. And it was too chaotic, it was too open, it was too free, it was too princehoody, if I could use such a term. And yeah, so for lack of a better word, it was just like too much freedom without any guardrails or frameworks. And I guess where I'm at right now is simplicity and sitting in a masculine frame that is just grounded, you know, and it's just slow and spacious, and it's got less fleetiness. So yeah, backtrack to my late 20s, you know, broken heart, you know, how do you fix this? Well, you sleep with as many women as possible, you know, drugs, parties, sex in whatever form it comes in. And no one was really saying no to that. If anything, it was being celebrated. And for me, it was a bit of a pendulum swing from being fairly disciplined in my teens. I grew up doing triathlons semi-professionally. And so life was very routine. It was very disciplined. And it creates a certain type of contraction in you that you can really feel once you actually stop a sport like that. Everything expands and everything's on the table. And so, you know, some people would call it just curiosity, or, you know, sowing your wild oats, which I think is just, you know, a cover-up story for, you know, everybody else giving themselves permission to be kind of free and open as well without any real consequences. And so I was sort of covering up how I was feeling in, you know, seeking out fun with women, you know, sexual relations, and then not really getting to the bottom of, well, like, who do I want to be as a person? So it was serving as a pretty good cover-up. And like I said, no one was saying no to that. And then I took that way of being into marriage. And so I got married in my late 20s. And, you know, this woman was fantastic. We had a great relationship on many fronts, but we were very naive to what would happen if we left certain windows open in our relationship, whether that was through partying, whether that was through sex, or just this sort of casualness to it, this sort of eroding of some traditions. And yeah, I look back on it now and I can see how we were both sort of stepping on tradition, and we're stepping on our lineage, or stepping on our parents. And in some ways, there was one part of us that was in for marriage and tradition, but then there was this whole other part of us that was just too open and free. And so, yeah, lo and behold, that actually blew everything up. I had an affair, and it was really just cowardice that, you know, opened the affair up to begin with and then continued it. And that was that pivotal moment where I saw myself, you know, kind of outside of myself. And it was just, okay, you've got to do something about this. And the moment was pretty real, and that and unfortunate for having a father like this, but it was the catalyst for him to really step in and show me the way, like the masculine way. And I moved back home, and I remember exactly where the conversation was, and he just sat me down and he looked at me and he said, okay, it was that sort of like, okay, son, here it is. And it was, you can move back in, but I want you to acknowledge that what you did was the absolute cowardice. You are not to go to your mother for coddling. You are not to drink. There is no porn. There is no parties. He just put down this, like, this rule. You have to pay your way. You have to keep your job. You have to keep working. We can go for walks and we can talk, but don't bring these emotions to your mother. Right? He just gave me containment, like masculine containment. He didn't say shut down my emotions, but he said, like, don't numb them, don't play to them, don't use them as some type of currency to get affection. Just like, dude, why didn't you say this, you know, 10 years prior? But I was in this place where I could actually hear what he had to say. And we hit the gym together, and we got back to some of the foundations of our relationship, which was, he was my triathlon coach growing up. So we got back into discipline. We got back into routines. You know, we got back into talking about the health of the human body and the health of the human mind, and, you know, what was a good life to live. You know, what are your values? What are your sort of code of ethics? And he was never a religious person. He was just, he's just, my father's a very passionate person, and he's just a big man. He's 6'4". He played rugby. You know, he's sort of, it's one of the old boys, and it was just what I needed. And from that point on, yeah, I went about exploring what was integrity, you know, what is my version of integrity, and, you know, what sort of man do I want to craft myself to be? And I really do feel, and I say that word deliberately, so I feel it quite deeply, that, and I part this on in my teaching, is that a man should, like, craft who he is. He needs a framework. He needs that containment. Otherwise, like, we'll just burn down the village. Like, we want to. Like, we want to. That desire to penetrate, and that desire to obliterate, like, that'll turn up everywhere, you know. So it's a pretty potent quality in men. But, yeah, maybe that's enough for now. That's where I'm at.
Mm-hmm.
That's where you're at. That's what's arrived you here. You spoke about that chaotic and too open in life, in relationship. How do you see that in the world now? If that question makes sense,
Yeah. Well, in my relationship coaching, I see it a lot in, you know, sacred sexuality. I see it a lot in tantra and how it starts to bleed into polyamory type concepts. Just as one area, in that it's not that we can't experiment with multiple paths. It's not that we can't do that properly, but that is such a high order way of operating that not many people are really cut out for, because so many people never really go through the right initiations in what lust means, you know, proper communication styles, you know, what is a healthy and functioning relationship for a long period of time before entering these more open spaces. So I guess I'm just seeing people jump into relationships that are open too soon, or, you know, because that might be avoiding something else that's like, there's too much lateral movement and not enough depth from that sort of more chaotic way or more open way of relating. But that's just one such way. There's many.
Yeah. It's kind of on the planet at this time, we're seeing a lot of chaos. There's a lot of lines blurring. There's not like that containment of the masculine in a lot of areas of life. And when you think like the micro to the macro, like what's happening on a big scale to a small scale, there's not that containment in a lot of humans' lives. It's just a free for all, you know, sow your oats, just like you spoke to, and not that discipline and holding yourself accountable or being integrity with who you are. What does it do for a man on an emotional, spiritual, physical level to have multiple partners, to sow his oats?
Yeah.
You know, that kind of.
Yeah. I guess it, to use that term that I just used before about the movement is lateral, I feel like the like pleasure starts to move out this way rather than being just enough here. You know, I'm a father of three, and you know, my wife's a deeply feminine woman, and so my children are a lot. You know, age 4, age 7, age 9, they're boys, and mixed with my what my wife feels in that, I need to be in a place where just being at the helm of our family feels good. Like that leadership for them, that needs to feel good. So if there's multiple partners for a man, not just the distractions and the actual practical management of that, because the logistics, I mean, trust me, I've tried it. The logistics of multiple partners is that alone, that's enough. But like how it hits pleasure centers means that it's like you're always seeking pleasure laterally or outside of yourself, right? So it's never just enough to have one. It's never just enough to have nothing. So getting to a place of needing nothing and having that actually feel good, I guess, is my corollary to that multiple partner or chaotic or distracted pleasure seeking qualities that, you know, not just men, but, you know, but definitely that men seem to be stuck in these days. And, you know, some of it may be part due to our use of technology and how quickly we've got access to, you know, different television shows or just different bits of information. So it's becoming harder and harder to need less and have pleasure in that. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
What does that mean for a man to need nothing?
It's really just, for me, it's what I said before, in that it's just pleasurable to need nothing. like there's less burdens. If a man is sitting there and he has a certain distaste for the moment, like that's agony for him. Like if he's not comfortable with that, he's going to start to distract and look elsewhere. But that's what life's like. Like there's always something turning up in front of you that you don't like. And so if a man's frame is strong enough, it doesn't matter. Like he kind of feels a little bit dead already. And death is freedom, you know. So if a child's erupting in front of him and he can't handle it, that is agony. But if a child is erupting in front of him and he can kind of feel that he doesn't need anything else, and it's just beautiful to see this child scream, he's found God. Like it's just he doesn't need to do anything. He can just be there. He can just be present. He can still think clearly. And that's freedom. Yeah. So
it's like he doesn't have practices, to run.
Yeah. Yeah. And running is the prince. Running is the little boy. You know, I see that in my sons, okay. Right? As soon as they get in trouble, they run. It's like, there it is. Like grown-ass men do that. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so is it that agony that causes them to run?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. They can't be with what is. Yeah. Yeah. And I would say that that's what feeds into the neediness of men. Sorry to interrupt you. But that's the neediness of men. The neediness comes from the agony. They don't know how to be self-resourced. And so they'll go clawing for it elsewhere as well. So they'll be running away, but then they'll also be like moving towards as well, rather than just being death and not needing anything.
I like that being death, like seeing death as a good thing for a man. Is that fair to say?
Yep.
Because as women, I think we try to avoid death, like deaths of ourselves. We try to cling to old versions of ourselves. We avoid it. But a man is seeking it. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. Yeah. Because there's nothingness in death. Like that's the ultimate form of freedom. Mm. Kind of. As macabre as that might sound, it's just that it's like it's the ultimate fear. Like death is the ultimate fear. And there's, for men, there's freedom on the other side of fear. So we can backtrack from death, you know, because our nervous systems do want to live. Like we will all get to a point where we will cling. But conceptually, or at times, a man can sit in that feeling of nothingness and being dead already, and that can feel good. But most men won't have the nervous system to stay there very long. So practically, coming back from that, just this basic concept of like, well, on the other side of fear, which is like his edge, let's say, there is freedom, whether that's seen as a challenging conversation, like conflict, he'll feel free after it on the other side. But a lot of men will only come to that edge and peer at it and see that he's got fear and then run. Because to use your word, it's agony.
So what does the initiations look like? Or what does it look like for a man to get to that space where he can sit in the discomfort?
That's a great question because, you know, either he blows his life up and he's forced to just be uncomfortable and get comfortable with being uncomfortable, like it just happens, or he chooses it. And the choice could be through physical pursuit. You know, like basically just this constant practice of what it's like to be in pain and to see that, oh, I can be in pain and I can come out the other side transformed. I can come out the other side strong. Actually, I need it. Oh, challenge is what my masculine needs. Oh, fine. Yeah, cool. Give me challenge. That's fine. Good. Like he sort of goes through this like either like self-initiation with it, or he's fucking up enough in life that it slaps him in the face and he actually has no choice but to kind of go through. But this is where I've actually, to come back to what you're talking about with the world right now and containment, I believe that the chaos is happening to teach men how to contain it. Like it's our fault that it's messed up. We can, like, as man and woman, we can all take 100% responsibility for our own parts in it. But for me, when there's drama, when there's chaos, you know, when something isn't working culturally, that's the masculine's fault. The containment's not there.
Have and you read the book by Stefan? Sorry.
No, go for it.
The book by Stefan Arnio. I think it's Horror, Priestess, Queen, Oracle. But he speaks about good times creating weak men. Have you heard this?
Yeah, I'm familiar with that, yes.
And we were kind of in good times for a while there. And then things shifted. Or things were maybe brought to the light. And we're in kind of chaotic times now. And it feels like these times are calling men to really step forward, to bring in that containment that we really need. And you know, they talk about pendulum swings, and we've swung so far to kind of the chaotic nature of more the feminine. You know, we're pretty chaotic and lead by love. And there's, you know, if it's our way, there's not a huge amount of discipline there. And now we're seeing that shift. Does it feel like this has happened because men have been responding to women? Or what does it feel like for you happened with the masculine where they, you know, step down?
Yeah, responding to women. And it's just been too easy. You know, in that for me, the feminine grows with support. The masculine grows with challenge. Come back to the use of technology, for example, like men have been outsourcing with technology. The institutions and the buildings that we live in have become like they're way back from the frontiers. You know, they're way back from the hunting grounds. They're way back from like something physical that a man has to build with his hands. And so the world he lives in, while there's challenges in it financially, and that there's just, it's all what I call inside the cave, and it's all very supportive, right? So the more that a man experiences comfort and support, the more his feminine will grow. I feel like that's what's happened, and now we're at a point where a lot of men are going, oh yeah, I need something. And I think that's why a lot of men are doing ice baths. It's very cute. You know, like I get it. I have ice baths occasionally, but it's like we've got these little micro initiations now that men are doing. Our ancestors would look back on it and just be like, oh, I remember my first beer. Like it'd be so silly, but that's the process. So while the pendulum has swung into that feminine, there's clearly a function to it though. So as men start to move back, what they may bring is a bit more empathy. They may bring a little bit more connection into their initiations, find challenge again, right? And the world's actually just going to start challenging us because of that lack of containment. So there's going to be lots of different challenges for men to go through. But as that pendulum starts to come back and create some, hopefully some more balance in that, is they'll bring along some of the lessons from the feminine. That's my observation of it.
Yeah. So you have boys. You have three boys?
Yeah.
What initiations, did you have any initiations when you were growing up, kind of going from that, and you'll have to correct me if I'm wrong, the stages of development for men, but it's, you know, do you go to page, to knight, to prince, to king?
Something like that, yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Did you have any concept? Boy, prince, man, or boy, prince, king, but same.
Okay. Okay. Did you have any initiations? Because it sounds like your dad gave you the initiation much later in life, in your 20s. Did you have initiations when you hit puberty and went through that change physically? And what will the initiations look like that you will give your boys?
Yeah. Look, from, you know, boy to prince, really all I feel like I had from the masculine, being my father and the men around me, were just like, just reference points. And they were good reference points. I got to experience a lot of discipline, a lot of structure. But there was nothing other than just like camping trips with some other men or, you know, sitting around barbecues, listening to men talk. Like there was nothing structured. There was nothing with any depth to it, but it served as good scaffolding. It served as a reference point that I come back to a lot now. So the initiations that I went through were more just like destructive initiations until my father had a conversation with me and created an initiation because he saw that I needed one. So, yeah, and I feel like men like myself these days with children are just going to be the ones who start to bring that timeline back a little bit. You know, so I was in my early 30s. Yeah, so by the time my sons are 14, yeah, I've already got queued up some men that I grew up with. Actually, my best friend who I grew up with, who has actually only just had a son. He's got three daughters and now a son. But a few years ago, I had mentioned to him, I was like, will you take my boys camping? You know, and...
So separate from you.
Yeah, I can't be there. Yeah. Oh. And challenge them, teach them things and start that process of being out in the world, still having some integrity to a father-like figure, but without mum or dad around. Mm. And there is initiations popping up. I was just catching up with a friend of mine a few days ago. And he was talking about his men's group who had started to bring young men along for initiations. You know, so you got a whole group of men, you know, sitting around a fire and choosing what initiations this young man needs, you know, into manhood. So, yeah, for me, that's the path. Yeah, it's still new. You know, we lost a lot of that information over the last couple hundred years. So we're definitely recreating. Yeah, so we'll see.
Yeah. I think sex and alcohol became the initiation for men. Yeah. Which, yeah, doesn't serve anything really, in my opinion.
No, it's like I can see how come. You know, of course we go down that road, all the neural circuitry's there, but we can still experience that same neural circuitry in a more contained way. But I just had a thought to maybe come back to with this comment of the pendulum swing. I feel it's quite pertinent to this conversation. And this one may be for a lot of women, actually. And it may help describe how come, like through social media, what we're seeing with masculinity at the moment. So we've got this pendulum swing where, you know, everything's become easy and the way to access women has become through the feminine. And so like men have sort of feminized themselves in that space. And as the pendulum is moving across, what's going to jump out, the men that are going to lead that space initially are going to be monsters. Right. So like, it's like
it's
saying,
back.
Yeah. So a lot of the, not necessarily integrated monsters. So a lot of the, let's say like desire that the feminine often comes through is like, you might have heard over the years a lot of women saying, oh, where are all the conscious men? You know? Well, they're going to turn up as disembodied monsters to begin with. It's going to come through with like these words and actions that's going to maybe feel a bit like misogyny. You're going to get men like Andrew Tate, you know, who are just shady characters. Behind what they're saying, there's some truth there. Like there's something that's something in there that is going to resonate with a lot of people, but there's going to be a huge component that is just going to be way off, way off. You know, I see it to some degree with Jordan Peterson. You know, there's just several men that are monstrous that haven't yet had the empathetic component come with them. And so, yeah, we're going to get these men that turn up with their big shields on, and they're still going to be carrying a bit of misogyny with them. But I feel like that will slow down in time. I feel like as that pendulum starts to come through, the men who are carrying the empathetic piece through with their monster are going to balance out that equation a little bit. But we're just not going to get consciousness in the way that we want it first. We're going to get it with the warrior, right? Because it is yeah. The warrior that gets onto the battleground. It is the warrior that gets onto the frontier and leads an initiation. So it's always at the front. It's always at the leading edge. So we can't take that too seriously. It's got a function. It's going to maybe hurt the nervous system a little bit. And a lot of women, I feel, or men that are in their feminine, are going to contract from that initially, like feel quite threatened. But I guess what I'm saying is in some strange way, trust it, because I don't know, this is partly why I do this work, is that there are going to be men who are able to come through and actually ground that. And that's going to be the good stuff.
That's really interesting, because I think as a woman, when we say where are all the conscious men at, in the past, when I've heard that or spoke it myself, we wanted those conscious men to look like conscious women, you know, and we see a lot of those now in the New Age world, but they become quite feminized because they're doing it a woman's way. And so what you were speaking to feels like these conscious men, but in a masculine way. Does that make sense?
Yes.
They're not feminized.
No.
What does a conscious man look like? Because I feel like at first it's not going to be what a woman wants it to look like, you know, it won't be this guy that's like going to talk about feelings and sit in tantra circles with us and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So what does a conscious man look like?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. Well, it's like, I'll ask you a question in that, like, what's the most attractive quality in a man for you?
His stature and strength and frame.
Yeah. And I might be leading you a little bit here, but can you control his stature? Can you control...
No.
That no. So I feel like the conscious man is a man that can't be controlled by a woman. So he has to have a bit of a monstrous quality to him. You know?
Yeah.
So
and that asks women, yeah.
Go on.
It asks women to let go of their control.
Bingo.
And to fully surrender. And I'm not sure why right now on the planet, but a lot of women really struggle with letting go of control, myself included. And I don't know if that's kind of like because men haven't been fully stepping into their, you know, frame and strength, or they've used it in really harmful ways, or I'm not sure what it is. Does anything come up for you that's caused so many women to grasp at control and need control?
Yeah, well, because they've needed to. The masculine frame hasn't been there in a sustainable way, in a deep way. So there's distrust. So for me, of course, women are struggling to let go of control. Like even culturally, we've made it taboo, you know, to hand control over to a man and to surrender and even have like sexual desire to be submissive. Like that is somewhat these days the ultimate taboo, which is quite strange given if you look at our physiology, like, you know, man penetrates woman, like the basic, you just get right down to that level and it's like, well, that's how we operate. You know, it's predator prey, but together it's a union. But the way in which that predator prey has gone about has created distrust. The way in which it's been interpreted, you know, has created trauma. The way in which it's been given has created trauma. And so as that pendulum's moving back, it's actually perfect that women have resistance to like a man's leadership. And yeah, like I say, good, because like if women aren't pushing back, like again, it's just too easy. Like men need a challenge. Like we need women to be saying no and rejecting them because it creates a calibration in them. Like for me, the feminine is an oracle. Like she is the weather report. She is the intention. You know, it's important to be able to discern what is, you know, toxic control and what is, you know, embodied and open surrender. Like we need to understand and have some discernment in that. But generally speaking, if a woman's looking at a man and going, ugh, good, like we need that. Like if a man finds that offensive, he's not in his masculine, you know? So, yeah, in short, I guess I'm saying it's just all perfect. And I know that might sound a little bit whimsical, but I guess that's how the friction of both of these qualities actually work together. She says no, she says no, she says no, she says no, she says no. Okay, okay. And he will then cultivate and refine. But it's important that men actually do that with each other as well.
Hello, loves. Just a quick little interruption from the episode to chat about one of my favorite products that I am an affiliate for. And so, as you all know, I have been on quite the healing journey this past year, and there have been a few products that are game changers for me. So part of my health journey has been insomnia, and I have been taking pearl powder from Wild Holistics, and I absolutely love Wild Holistics. I love their small batch, cozy feeling company that feels very nourishing and is very supportive and natural. And so I love the pearl powder as well as the liver protector. It is full of so much medicine for the liver, which we all know is under a lot of stress with the stressors that we have in our life at this time, and as well as the elevated mind with the saffron. There is so much research and medicine that goes into that is in saffron and its healing effects on the mind as well as eyes. So definitely check out Wild Holistic. There's a link in the show notes for 10% off with discount code Lisa. Back to the show.
What would you say are the key things that a man requires to get to that point? You know, what are the outside factors that he requires? You know, is it men's groups? Is it, you know, what does that look like so that a man can get to that refinement point?
Yeah, well, firstly, it starts with himself. You know, if he's not healthy, Like it's, I know it's basic and it's boring, but he needs to be healthy. And men need to acknowledge what healthy is for them. And it's about genetic expression. So they've somewhat got to be unapologetically male in order to feel healthy. You know, it's lift weights. It's do challenging things. It's, you know, eat in a way that they understand their physiology thrives, not what people are telling them to eat. Because, you know, often I sit around in some of the men's retreats that I put on, and when the men are just sitting around, it's just like steak and fruit. It's just like there's not much going on. Maybe there's a piece of bread occasionally, but it's, you know, it's not this like big extravagant thing where they're adding all these colors and flavors. It's, you know, we're actually in that masculine space, very simple, and can feel and are very intuitive around how that's going to be used by their physiology, because they can feel how that creates that genetic expression for them. And so that taking care of self leads to understanding what regulates them, you know, what helps them perform, what helps them show up with some level of clarity. And then it's being with men and cultivating like wide and deep relationships with men. So it's about not necessarily going into their trauma, but it's, well, their inner feminine. It's actually about sort of getting around men and just understanding what intimacy is. Not vulnerability, but honesty. You know, just sitting in circle with men and just telling them what you've been doing. It's like, hey, lads, what do you think about this idea? Am I on the mark here? Like having a council of good men around him. And then in that order, himself with other men, then he's ready to actually be around a woman and start to cultivate that integrity with her. A lot of the men that I do work with have started their work with her. They've not done any work on themselves. They have no deep relationships with other men. They have no good men around them. And there they are, belly to belly with a woman. And they're completely ill-equipped. And she will test him and test him and test him. And he won't know what to do. And so he'll just concede a little bit and concede a little bit, and she'll probably be quite strong. You know, she'll probably have performed better at school than him. She'll probably just be a better person in numerous areas of life than he is. And yeah, that's a hard one. So we sort of need to flip that around, and it's self, men, and then her. And then from that place, he'll then actually start to see her oracle, and she will actually see his monster and be able to work appropriately. Because she will be like, that's my monster. And she'll love it. You know, like a monster to do her bidding almost. You know, and he will just be, he'll be back in that place of where we started this call, which was like, it'll feel pleasurable for him just to protect her. And lead her and provide containment. Like you'll be happy to sit on the porch all night watching the darkness. It's like, yep, I'm in my place. You know, that'll start to feel good while she sleeps. Yeah. But if it is done in that way, whether it's her first, he'll be following her around the house everywhere and looking for her guidance, and it gets very leaky.
Can it get to that same place the opposite way, where he's doing it for her? Can he get to that like king space?
How do you mean?
So you've spoken to, yeah, if he's doing it or he's responding to his woman, he's already belly to belly with his woman. He's not got this group of men that are holding him accountable, all that kind of stuff. He's not starting with himself. He's starting from the other end. Can he still get to that same place?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's that's the work I do. So I guess I spout an ideal. That ideal could just be an orientation of like time prioritization. So the way through on that one there would be him acknowledging it's like, oh, I haven't done the work on myself. I haven't gone deep with other men. Here I am, belly to belly with a woman. I need to time prioritize myself. And that's a massive conversation for any person to have that's in a codependent relationship. And prioritize the men. And then give to her. And yeah, it's a huge process. There are some really big aha moments early on, and there it pays to have her doing some corollary to that work at the same time, where she's working on herself, she's in the sisterhood, and cultivating those other reference points, particularly with Eros, particularly with the holy sacred whore. If she's in a group of women that are all embodying that and showing her how that's actually a really powerful place to be, a really sacred place to be, she's going to have less resistance to his monster and understand its place. So, it goes both ways.
Okay. The monster, is that like the primal aspect of a man?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
you could say that you could say that it sits near the warrior.
With men like Andrew Tate and Jordan Peterson, what are the aspects that you spoke to it early where it's too much? Like they're leading too much with the monster?
Yeah. Look, maybe it's that my feeling is that it's women are listening to men's work. And they're out there with a message that should maybe, I haven't thought very clearly on the articulation of this, but there is a feeling that maybe there is more containment that they need to have. And I just say this from, I know a lot of really heart open, empathetic men, like strong men, that you could sit down and talk about the concepts that they're talking about and just be like, yes. And men would all sit around in a circle and nod. And they would put also then no drama to the stuff that they disagreed with. They'd just disagree and give it no energy. Whereas when it's in the public space, because it's not contained properly, and because it's done through social media and sales and marketing, and like the drama is used, a lot of people sort of talk about it and it just gets messy. The drama is there. The context is also not there. Interesting
testosterone
space.
Can we speak a little bit to testosterone? I said that weird. And what causes a man to lose testosterone, and what can raise the level? It's kind of a bit of an epidemic right now, isn't it, with testosterone?
It just comes back to this pendulum swing that we're talking about, is that it's just too easeful. And, testosterone comes through from challenge. Just even researched 6 sets of 10 in the weights room, where there's maybe 2 or 3 reps in reserve each set with only a couple of minutes rest, like is one of the fastest physiological ways a man can actually use some testosterone in his system and start to stimulate the release of or manufacture of new testosterone. It's coming through from there being too much ease, but then there is also a bombardment of environmental toxins. And our hormonal system is just so incredibly sensitive to like metabolites and foreign particles in our system that begin to actually mimic hormones. And that's the scary thing. So like plastics, for example, mimic certain hormones in the body, and that would be extended to, you know, self-care products and, you know, household cleaning products. And so, yeah, of course, the industrialized world, of course, it's starting to come through and wreak havoc with our physiology, because we're not adapted to that yet. Like, I have this real observation in our lives that we have this, like, we still have this primal physiology fully alive and ready to go. But we've got these medieval institutions, and then we're using godlike technology to communicate. And so somehow we have to make sense of that, as well as all those environmental toxins. And, you know, the drop in testosterone is potentially just one of the ways in which we adapt to that container that we're in. So, yeah, removing those foreign pollutants is one step. Getting back to eating in a more sort of primally aligned way so that our physiology can have better genetic expression. Orientating ourselves in the world back to, and like honoring our physiology from an inside the cave or outside the cave perspective, like we're talking about with, like, women grow with support and men grow with challenge, and sort of wrapping that all up and then just living life, like being vital. And we should start to see a rise back up in that testosterone. But testosterone is also, it gets a bit of a bad rap. So I think a lot of men balk at the concept of, you know, checking out their testosterone levels or even doing something to stimulate them. But, you know, just for context with what we're talking about here, like, both men and women, the highest hormone, if you're just looking at very simplistic hormonal panels between estrogen and testosterone, both men and women, the highest one is testosterone. Men sit up here, women sit here. So when we demonize testosterone, we're off. Like, testosterone is actually a very calming hormone. So the more grounded, more calm a man is, the higher his testosterone is. And when I say higher, it means like used and in balance. And so testosterone isn't just about having high levels. It's also about, well, can you access it? But once it has been accessed, a man is very calm. Like, it's a calming hormone. It's when a man's estrogen levels are up is where he's in chaos, and that's where he's actually maybe a bit brain foggy and a bit needy, a bit confused, a bit wayward. Like, that's actually, or destructive or angry. Like, that's not testosterone. Yeah.
That's interesting, because I would have thought anger came from testosterone. And wasn't it James Cameron? Somebody said,
yeah,
some Hollywood guy said that, yeah, testosterone was bad or something.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that. I don't remember exactly what he said.
Yeah, should just stick to making movies, you know. Like, I'm pretty sure he's never looked at a blood panel and had a nutrition consult with anybody. mm-hmm. You know. Mm-hmm. And I do say this from working, like I've worked in the health industry for 23 years as a strength and conditioning coach and an integrative health coach, and the most destructive, damaging, potentially even toxic people are men with low testosterone. They're just like a burden to society. You know, they're gossipy. They whinge. You know, they talk behind people's backs. They love drama. They're always blaming other people. They're stuck in a victim space. Or they're just tired and getting unhealthy and becoming a burden to the medical system. And I don't say any of this with judgment. I just say, like, this is just what's happening. But we've got to get back to this place of understanding that We need testosterone. Both men and women need testosterone to be healthy. And then if we live a life that's a bit more aligned with our physiology, including in relationships, it'll balance out pretty quickly. And we'll see that it's actually very functional. But it's just going to take time. And when you've got people like him talking about it and demonizing it, it's just, yeah, that pendulum's going to stay over here for a while with that until it comes back.
Yeah, yeah. What do men require from women to allow them to, well, one, what do men require from women for them to be in a happy, loving relationship, union? And what do men require from women to allow them to really step into that, you know, masculine frame, king energy?
Yeah. Well, firstly, it's respect. It's not love. I would say that we would put respect in a hierarchy higher than love. You know, I see this in my calls, particularly my relationship calls, when the woman turns to him and she says, I love you. He is kind of like, is great, honey, you know, whereas when she's just looking at him and maybe she doesn't even have to say anything, or her actions throughout the day are about just like respecting him. Yeah, it hits him in a deeper place. That occurs as love to him. This is why men's work is so important, is because like men understand what respect is when they're around each other. You know, can I count on that man? Can he count on me? Do I respect you? Do you respect me? Do I trust you? Do you trust me? Oh, it's like the ultimate feeling of like strength. And so if he's got that reference point in relationship with her, then he's able to discern between love and respect and very clearly then show to her like what are respectful behaviors. Yeah, and there's corollaries for women too. So for her, it's potentially getting to a space where she's okay to fall back, and the dynamic then is if he does something that's good, she celebrates it, because for men that's inspiring, and the celebration needs to be awe-inspiring. So let's say a man has been smoking weed and hitting the Doritos and watching sport and not really doing anything. And, you know, he's dropped the ball and taking out the trash. And all of a sudden one day he takes the trash out. You know, if she can acknowledge that, not so much to be like, oh, good boy, but just to kind of look at him and just kind of share some kind of light. And that could be on a spectrum of just very basic, like smiling and openness, all the way through to flashing breasts, to like dancing, twerking, you know, running up to him, lifting her back leg and just being like, oh, you know, just something, you know, just to kind of celebrate his forward facing action, as small as that is. Then he'll be more inspired to keep forward facing. He'll be more awe-inspired and more driven to be that helpful, useful, masculine presence in that life. Whereas a lot of modern-day relationships just get very egalitarian. There's not respect, there's resentment, and it just doesn't work.
Yeah. And you were speaking to taboos earlier on in the conversation. I think a big taboo right now is to actually need a man. You know, we've been conditioned to, I mean, there's so many women that will be like, oh, I don't need a man. You know, I can do it on my own. And, you know, I'm not the expert on this by any means, and correct me if I'm wrong, but if a man doesn't feel useful or needed, for him it's kind of like, well, what's the point? Is that fair to say?
Yeah, very fair to say.
Yeah. And so that, I guess it's that opening up for a woman, you know, that surrender for a woman to kind of drop the balls or let everything go so that she can be led by a man.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this term falling back, I've taken it from my wife. Actually, when I hear her, I've heard her in some of the couples calls that we've done. And even if she habitually steps forward, you know, she'll just be like, she might apologize and just be like, I'll fall back next time. You know, cause I think that's the thing. Cause like men are, they need to be sort of like forward facing. This is the way. And so if she's doing that same thing, then yeah, like if she's being the man, like why would he even try to be? It just doesn't work. I mean, that's why I think men's work is so good. It's just like there's no attraction there for men. It's just like you're both occupying the same space. But hear that, there's no attraction there. A lot of men will start to engorge and actually, you know, get quite turned on when she comes up to him and is just like happy to nuzzle under his wing and say, like, sir, can you help me with something? And he'll just be like yes. So her falling back isn't just a physical like falling back. It's a taking on a sort of surrendered shape in her nervous system. But to your point of a lot of women will be in a place of saying they can do it themselves. Firstly, of course, they're saying that because men haven't been doing it. But that therein lies the problem. Like, that's the father wound. It's just distrust in the masculine, so you'll take it on yourself. And what I would say to that for women is just, well, yes, but if you have that desire to be met by a man, you have to take yourself out of that space for him to come up and walk in and actually occupy it for you. So, yeah, it's not easy.
Yeah. It's the big work.
It is.
For this time. Yeah.
Yeah.
For you, what would you say, as you know, you spoke that you cheated in your previous marriage. Mm. What causes a man to cheat?
Yeah, that's another good question. My first thought is just a lack of integrity. Mm. But it's more complex than that. In that, like, sex sits in a different place for men. And I would go as far as saying that, like, sex, and I'm sure this can be the case for women too, but speaking to men and the work that I've done, it is like we can be very removed from it. And I feel that because sex exists in our fight or flight system, it's in many ways coming back to some ancient physiology about just getting it done. And I observe that it's that part of our physiology links up with a lack of integrity. And the lack of integrity gives permission to that lust. Underneath that sits that lack of education and the lack of guidance around what a man would get from going deeper with a woman. And because he can't do that, whether that's through the damage that's been done to him with porn and the habits he may have set up in his physiology, or socially what constructs we've created around what is sexual performance for a man. So he moves laterally instead. So rather than going deeper with one, he goes laterally with others. And on the back end of that, to quote Kanye West, one good girl is worth 1,000 bitches. In that, if a man can learn how to like evoke out of one woman those 1,000 women, all of those desires to sow your seed laterally can be met in that depth. And the function of that then for her is that she then gets to, oh, this might sound a bit much, but we'll go there. She gets to clean the pipes energetically in all these areas of her physiology. The priestess, the maiden, the wild woman, the crone, the erotic mother, the sacred slut, you name it. So it starts to get some of that white noise off her system as well. So back to this comment of union that you've been bringing up a couple of times. I believe that's where the function is with going deeper with each other, is that it's very cleansing for his integrity, and it's also then very cleansing for her eros.
Yeah. You speak to a man giving his seed to a woman. And what does that do for a man when he gives his seed to a woman? And then what does it do for a man when he's getting rid of it elsewhere? Mm-hmm. You know, yeah.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting one to talk about because a lot of it depends on whether he respects his seed or not, first and foremost. So if a man's been going about not really seeing his semen as something sacred, like his whole life, he's never really going to have a lot of respect for it other than maybe sometimes the consequences that come with it. So, but if a man is in a place where his seed is sacred and hasn't sort of been tainted by other perspectives, what it feels like is that it's a part of ownership. Like it's a part of conquest. It's a part of occupying her. What a lot of men think about when they do ejaculate into a woman is how it goes everywhere inside her. Like they literally think about the flesh and the fluid and the occupation of her. So it starts to create somewhat of a marking of his territory. And if a man, like whatever a man owns, he takes care of. Particularly if what he owns sits in his value system. So if a man loves riding a motorbike or he values freedom, he owns a motorbike, I guarantee you it's clean all the time. I guarantee you he prioritizes its servicing. If he's got a motorbike and he's not prioritizing its servicing and it's not clean, well, it probably doesn't sit in his value system in a way that he has sort of claimed ownership of it. So in the same way, when it comes to children or if it comes to, so if that seed grows, if it comes to his woman, if he can have that feeling around how his seed given to her creates that ownership, it sort of feeds back into that awe-inspiring, this is mine, I'm going to take care of it, I'm the provider, protector. That's my territory. I've got to look after it. Scope of his masculine attention. Yeah. But I, again, caveated with Like if he's been throwing his seed everywhere, then he won't respect it. And he won't notice that. It'll just be jizzing in her because that's what you do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think we're close to the same age as me. We grew up in a culture. Well, I know I did in Canada, where sex was not sacred. It was just a whole lot of hookup culture. We've spoken about it, sex, drugs, you know, partying. And so when sex isn't sacred or a spiritual union, so to speak, you're not really respecting your seed on a man's point, and a woman's not really respecting her body or the oracular wisdom of her womb. You know, it's just a thing you do.
It's just a thing you do.
I feel like just a thing you do. I feel like the integrity and sacredness and respect is coming back, or maybe we're just getting older. I don't know. You know, where there's more depth. Or maybe it's that more traditional aspect of life is coming back. You know?
Yeah, well said. I've been reflecting on that a little bit lately and just using it as a way to check in on myself with what I teach. Is it just coming from age? Is it coming from that? Is it just maturity, or is this the way it should be? And I think it's a bit of both. I think it's the maturity piece is it. I think when men and women are starting to engage sexually as they're a bit older, it's where we understand it more as, oh, that's adult play. Like, it's a really good thing and it's really needed, and it's more than just relief. And yeah, it serves both celebration functions as well as, oh, how do we actually create something together? You know, whether there's a child involved or not. So, I mean, it's good. but that conversation just needs to be parted with people sooner, really. And I don't really know what's happening to the youth with sex, other than I notice words being used sooner. And they just have an awareness of certain aspects of sex sooner. I've never done online dating culture, like with Tinder or anything like that, but I get the odd inquiry from men who are in that space, and they are in a very transactional experience when it comes to sex. But they're not actually having that much. I feel like our generation still maybe had more because there was maybe less to do. We weren't distracted by technology. Mm-hmm. We would be dancing. And that, you know, that connection would lead to something more. Yeah. It's an interesting time, but I feel like for 40 plus, sex is going to become instrumental to us making sense of our lives. As much as like dancing, the appropriate use of substances, music, community, and entering spaces of, it's interesting I say this, but like transhuman like spaces, meaning for me, not like transgender or anything like that, but meaning more so I am you, you are me, we're interacting. Oh, we can get into this trance-like state together, and we can shift our neural chemistry, and then we can feed that back into the family loop or the family circuit, and like have the bed the centerpiece of the family home, you know, because he gives to her and she respects him, and they know how to have fun sexually. It's not just spiritual, there's laughter, which, you know, many would argue that is spiritual, but we can see the function of good sex, of good relating, and how it actually can create state changes and actually give back to our community. Because that couple, when they walk around down the street holding hands, that gives them others in that community permission to go deeper with their partner. And it just starts to ripple out. The children see it, they feel it, and they take that into their classrooms, and they can use it in their thinking. Not in a programmed way, but in it's just like, oh, that's just a healthy reference point. They get along. Cool. Mm-hmm. Let's do that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's important for our health too.
Yeah.
Very important for our physical health. You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
You spoke earlier, I just want to be mindful of your time here, but you spoke earlier about your dad being like, you can't talk to your mom. You can't bring your feelings to your mom. Mm. When you went through your initiation phase, what is the importance of a man severing his ties from his mother? Like, what was the importance in your dad being like, you can't take your emotions to your mom?
The way he worded it to me was he said she can't handle it. And he said it from maybe protecting her a bit, but it was true in that I feel like men should not bring their shit to a woman. Because if a man really does bring his shit to a woman, it's big. Or it's just gross. And it destabilizes her sexual centers. So it starts to collapse in on itself. So back to men having good men, as though they could bring that stuff to other men if they need to. But often in my work, and I saw this with how my dad was doing this, is if you go and work out, if you be healthy, if you eat the right foods, if you keep talking, and he was very much like, keep your heart open, right? But it was this place of regulation. You could actually, there might not be as much shit there as you think. You might actually just be dysregulated. So be a man, do these things. Then see whether or not you actually need to process more. Over processing, I suppose, is the thing. It's just that if a man starts to bring his emotions to a woman and expects her to hold them, and or they're just processing each other's stuff all the time, it's just going to tank the polarity pretty quick. And the flow on is pretty gross, in my opinion. Yeah. And so we may have the situation where a lot of women find it attractive for men to be vulnerable with them and show some emotion. But I'd offer that, like, too much of it won't be. Too much of it will be a problem. I think there's some truth in that. I think women do want to feel some passion. They want to feel some type of emotion. But You might be able to answer this more accurately than I can, because I do mostly focus just on men, but I offer that, like, she will, she would prefer that he bring that to her with some type of clarity, that he's done some level of processing of what he's been doing or what he's got going on, and he can distill down this tome of problems that he's got down to a sentence of like, oh, babe, I'm going to change this in my life. Not like, oh, the drama. The drama and the problems and this person and my mother wound and what I've been noticing about myself lately is blah, 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 and just, you know, no. It's like, yeah, you can have that, but share it in your journal or to the trees and then bring it down to something that she can actually metabolize. Yeah. How does that feel for you?
I think it speaks to, I would say that's pretty bang on there. I think what it spoke to at first, you know, we were speaking to women wanting conscious men. And I think women have this idea of a conscious man being the one that's spilling their emotions out and telling you everything and like just spilling their heart out. But that gets pretty depolarizing very quickly. Because when you ask me what I find attractive in a man, it's his strength and frame and stability. And that, if you're receiving that all the time, is not what most women find attractive in a man. And so it becomes not very attractive after a while. So that condensing it and giving it to us in a way that we can metabolize, I think, is exactly what women actually require. Maybe not what they think they want at first, you know?
Yeah, well said.
What's been your biggest lesson along the way?
My biggest lesson has been, it's not going to be very exciting, but it's go to the gym. But it's really just a metaphor for challenge, which is, it's just to honor my physiology. That's just been my biggest lesson. So yeah, back to what my father said, it's really become an orientation for truth for me, because in that is regulation, and there's not much else to do if I'm regulated. If I'm dysregulated, it all looks like too much. And so, the more I honor my physiology, the more I notice there isn't triggers, there isn't trauma, there isn't all this bullshit that, like, you know, would fuel the pocket, or sorry, would line the pockets of psychologists and counselors and so on. No, I actually had a really good upbringing. My parents were great, and they still are. You know, is it healthy for me to look at my inner child? Yeah. Is it important for me to check in on my mother wound? Yes. You know, did my mother coddle me here, here, here? Yeah. And she should have too. You know, it's fine. what was my reference point growing up with my father? Yes, all that stuff. You know, what are my shadow aspects? For sure. But so much of that gets toned down and becomes very, very simplified if I just really honor my physiology. And these days I just coin it as, go to the fucking gym. and it's how men need to hear it, for sure. And I'm sure there's a corollary for women too.
That's
not my space.
Thank you for this conversation. Is there anything that I haven't touched on that you want to share before we close?
No, that feels pretty complete to me. I get the feeling like we could do this for a while.
We might have to do a part two.
Maybe we do a part two. Yeah, I'd enjoy that.
Yeah, no, that would be awesome. Do you have any offerings coming up, and where can everybody find you?
Look, I'm just on Instagram these days. I keep it real simple. It's just Roscoe, R-O-S-K-O, Blake. And I offer some free 30-minute calls at the moment. It's probably the biggest thing that I want to talk about today. I do a troubleshooter call for men, and I do a problem-solving type call for women. Can't remember what I call it. It's got some kind of taggy catch line, but there's a call for him, a call for her, and a call for couples. You know, so if anyone's interested in having a conversation, that's a new offer for me, is offering some free support. And outside of that, I offer for men remote performance coaching. So there's some offers in there that are, you know, either monthly or half yearly or a full year that they can jump into, and it involves a lot of health and fitness work. But then there are these conversations not too dissimilar to this, where we go in deeper and unpack how they're performing as a man and what's actually going on in their relationship. And one of my favorite ways to work with men is in real time and just be on call, semi on call. So if they've had a blow up in their relationship, they can actually call and talk about it while it's alive. So I'm not offering any programs or curriculums. I'm just offering very much one-to-one, you know, relationship connected based coaching.
Nice. It'll be in the show notes.
Thank you.
Where everybody can reach out and experience your work. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining me for an episode of the Phoenix Rising podcast. Please like, share, download, subscribe if you enjoyed this episode, and I will see you next week for another episode on the Phoenix Rising podcast. Sending so much love.